Back here on After Hours, rolling along. First hour in the books. 2 hours left. We're here till 9, 8 o'clock. We've got an out of left field question for you. Been a while since we've done that, but hey, here we are. It's a full show, so I try to give you the show the way it always is. It still looks like it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Happy first day of summer. Happy longest day of the year. I told myself, no brews on the patio tonight. I'm starting to think otherwise. Got a pretty easy day tomorrow. Nothing on the books except the side gig. That doesn't start till 10:45. I don't have to be up early. Probably ought to get up and mow. I heard Dan Weinbaum in the bullpen. People should not try to mow after 2 p.m. Dan Weinbaum, KMBZ. Do I really want to get up at 8 and mow my lawn? I don't necessarily need to. But I should. You think that 1-2 punch idea is pretty good for a t-shirt?
I do. I think people will get into it.
Charlie Hustle? Maybe I should like DM Charlie Hustle.
Yeah, I think the Cody and Gold Show does ray gun t-shirts. Mm-hmm. I think that's their hookup.
Yeah. That's a hell of a shirt.
I also think
the shirt should be burgundy.
Part of it in my head, I'm just imagining the Kool-Aid man with their faces in it. So to me, it just in my head, it's just funny.
A 1-2 punch that's strong. It's got to have some sort of message on it. A KC 1-2 punch, a Kansas City 1-2 punch. I mean, I don't know how recognizable they are. Sounds like grounds to get effed up to me from the 620. I don't want to get, like, you know, blacked out. I'm not trying to get all, like, cross-eyed and stuff. But a nice little tall boy sixer. I mean, it's still currently 87 degrees. It says it's going to be 77 at 11 p.m. That's some good drinking beer weather, you know? Anyways. Quentin, I know you like these sort of topics, and that's why I did it, because I knew you were going to be here tonight. And Adam Schefter, of course, is bored out of his mind. And he tweets 18 days after Trevor Lawrence got his contract and says, with Trevor Lawrence having signed his new deal, the highest paid QBs for the 24 to 27 seasons on a cash flow basis currently are Mahomes, Burrow, Goff, Hurts, Watson, Herbert, Cousins, Jackson, Lawrence, Murray. I don't need to tell the first names. I think you all know who those first names are. By the way, Jay Binkley will join us in 10 minutes. Who's the most overrated quarterback when it comes to those contracts?
Isn't it Watson, and it's not even close?
Fair, right? He's the one that sticks out the most, right? The Browns signed the death penalty. They gave him all the guaranteed money, and they got to the playoffs with a guy who they called out of a high school minivan car lane, right? Joe Flacco. We heard those stories. That's not an insult. That's truth. He was picking his kids up from school, and he was playing with like all the like high school kids throwing him pass routes. That's what he was doing. And
I call him Joe Flacco because his entire career has been a fluke.
Still got that ring, Daddy.
He still got that ring, but it's a fluke.
And he beat the Broncos en route to that ring, so I'm okay with Joe Flacco.
And I'm at a protest when he goes to the Hall of Fame.
He won't go to the Hall of Fame. I did see a funny thing on Twitter today. It said, who's more of a Hall of Famer in your mind? And it had a picture of Russell Wilson and Matt Stafford. And I was like, oh, man, this is a rough day for Matthew Stafford. Not only did his wife say on a podcast that she got with the backup quarterback to make her boyfriend jealous after breaking up. We're also asking if it's Russell Wilson or Matthew Stafford as a Hall of Famer. I mean, I get it. Russell Wilson's probably going to get in because he rode the coattails of one of the greatest defenses to ever play football. But Matthew Stafford, go look at his numbers in Detroit. Right? They were dog water. That's an old saying for those of you that don't remember that. Dog water. And he was still putting up 4K yards. He was doing it with Calvin Johnson. Then Calvin Johnson felt so bad for him and himself, he retired. But I look at this list of highest QBs on a cash flow basis Mahomes at $215.6 million leads the list. Mahomes is not only like the highest paid, but Mahomes broke the QB market. We can all agree, like, we knew that that's one of those markets that's just never going to stop going up until eventually football dies, which I think we're still many, many moons until that happens. Joe Burrow, worth it. But Joe Burrow did the impossible. Joe Burrow beat Mahomes in the playoffs, where only two quarterbacks have done it. He's one, Brady's the other. That's it. Like, that's it. One guy doesn't play anymore, and the other guy's got a dainty wrist that we don't know if it'll ever be the same. But Jared Goff, Jalen Hurts, Deshaun Watson, Kirk Cousins, Lamar Jackson, Trevor Lawrence, and Kyler Murray all round out the list of the most paid. And I reason why I say who's overpaid, and Watson's the one that sticks out the most, and then a lot of people might be like, well, Jalen Hurts. I don't know, man. Kyler Murray might be up there.
That would be my next one.
Right?
And I really like watching Kyler May play football. I think he's just, he's a phenomenal athlete, and I love watching athletes do what they do best. And right. But yeah, his was the mentality of, oh, the next one up, right? He was the next one up to get paid, so he got a huge contract. He hasn't really proven a ton on the field. It doesn't help that
right.
He got hurt, he blew his knee out, and so, you know, he's had less time to. But Kyler Murray for me is definitely on that list, because when you start talking about the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, I think most people would leave out Kyler Murray. You could easily name the top six, top seven, but you would forget about Kyler Murray.
Yeah. And I mean, look, quarterbacks get paid a little, most of the time, earlier than maybe they should. And again, I say that Mahomes broke the market because Mahomes also did it for his damn self, right? Like, Mahomes is one of those quarterbacks, unlike some of the others, because there's only been one other AFC quarterback to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl in the last 6 years, right? Brady did it. Mahomes is second year in the league, and Burrow did it 3 years ago. So in the last 7 years, two different quarterbacks have represented the AFC. Tom Brady and Joe Burrow. Ever since then, or other outside of that, it's Patrick Mahomes. And Patrick Mahomes had one of those sort of things where he put the numbers up. So when the discussion happened, he just sat in the room and said, start with a number and then we'll discuss. Whereas these other guys, they get the number first and then try to fluctuate it towards their well-being. Right, Trevor Lawrence. Well, you don't have to pay me, but if you don't have me, you start over. Is he good enough? Sure. The other thing that I brought up is kind of a joke, is that in every AFC quarterback's contract, they should have an extra incentive. And that is, can you beat Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs? We'll give you an extra $2.5 million if you beat Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. Now, I know in contracts in general for players and coaches, if you win playoff games or if you, whatever, you just automatically get a bonus. No. Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, right? All these quarterbacks that are in the AFC, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa. Here's your contract. Here's all the incentives. And they read through the line, okay. Win 10 games, throw for 3,500 yards, throw for 30 touchdowns, beat Patrick Mahomes in the play. Wait, is that a new one? Which one? The beat Patrick Mahomes in the playoff. Yeah. Yeah, you beat him, you get $2.5 million. You kidding me? No. We're sick of seeing this guy beat everybody. So if you can beat him, you get an extra $2.5 million. It's a $2.5 million payday. One game. You just got to beat Patrick Mahomes. Because not a lot of people do it, but AFC quarterbacks still get paid in the same ballpark as a quarterback that has been the only AFC quarterback outside of two, one, the greatest to ever do it, and his first year started, and he lost to him, which we can go back into that if you want. The other one, Patrick Mahomes had the worst second half of his career, and Joe Burrow rode into a three-point win against Patrick Mahomes to make the playoffs. So again, it's interesting. A lot of money going to quarterbacks just to lose in the playoffs to Patrick Mahomes. So there should be an incentive, and two, There's a little bit of overpricing, but that's because of two reasons. One, teams don't want to start from scratch because it's annoying. And two, Patrick Mahomes broke the damn quarterback market. I'm Dusty Likens. That's Quentin on the other side. We get Jay Binkley on the line because there's a Chiefs camp coming around the corner. And I want to ask Jay Binkley maybe what his big camp battles are when we come back on the other side. Listen to 610 Sports Radio, and this program is called After Hours. Back here on After Hours, little Thursday night edition. Hope everybody's having a good night on the first day of summer, the longest day of the year. Gives you a few extra hours to, you know, enjoy after hours and stay up late and stay on your patio because it's still light outside and it gets funky after midnight. Jay Binkley joins the show as the Character Concerns podcast and a host here at 610 Sports Radio. Bink, how are you doing this evening, my man?
What's going on, Dustman and Q-Dog? Thanks. I'm sitting on the porch drinking a long neck ice cold beer. It never let me down, like diamond rings and football teams.
I'll tell you what, man. You see the Chiefs have spent in the last three Super Bowl rings, $28 million on rings.
Yeah, $28 million. $28 million, but are they going to get the seventh seed changed to the sixth seed or just make it unusual?
Do you think
like Kelsey said.
Do you think is that real? So it really did say seventh seed?
I guess Kelsey verified it basically on his podcast, so I assume it did. Who knows? Who knows if it did or not? I would probably have a fun phone call to them if I was the Chiefs.
Well, you know what I got to say is maybe next year you get one for free or you get a little bit of a discount.
It doesn't matter. It makes it priceless, you know. It makes it valuable, you know. And
right.
In 20, 30 years, I think it's going to be more valuable and no one's going to care at some point. You know what I mean?
No doubt about it. So I saw an interesting tweet today. I want to give credit to the handle that I saw it from because they're pretty big Chiefs. It's called How About Those Chiefs on Twitter, HBT Chiefs. They said, what training camp storylines will you be keeping a close eye on? Which position battles? Any hot takes? Yep. Let me know. Binkley, I start with this question off with you tonight because you are, I'm sure you're just champing at the bit to get to training camp talk, which I know, I mean, it's right around the corner. We're almost a month away as they announced the schedule earlier this week. But what's maybe something that, like, as in, we'll start with this, like, what's a storyline that Jay Binkley is kind of interested in when it comes to the 2024-2025 season of the Kansas City Chiefs and the camp situation?
Well, I think the first one is obviously Rashee Rice. You know, is it going to be suspension at the beginning of the year, middle of the year, end of the year, maybe not even this year, next year? When's it going to be? I mean, I think that does matter for this offense and which direction they go, but you take that aside. I think the left tackle battle, I think that's the most interesting one to me. Sure, there was going to be a punter battle, but it didn't look like it'd be a punter battle anymore. It's going to be Matt Araiza as the punter. But left tackle to me, because Wanye Morris is a guy that, you know, both Brett Veach and Andy Reid, you know, spoke on. They spoke highly of him, but, you know, said he needs some work and needs to turn things around and things like that. He did get four starts under his belt. But I'm curious about Kingsley and how much they liked him, because, you know, you're talking about maybe a first-round pick that didn't go in the first round that could have. He comes in with the right attitude, obviously, from BYU. Andy Reid and his love for BYU. BYU played better competition last year, beat in the Big 12. It made a difference. But I'm always concerned about a rookie playing left tackle because, you know, Andy Reid, with his quarterback situations, is why he brings in the veteran quarterbacks, like you've seen in the past with Nick Foles and Chad Henne and Matt Moore, and what you see now with Carson Wentz. Is Kingsley going to be that guy, left tackle for the Chiefs, or is it going to be Wanye Morris, or are they going to make that emergency phone call and bring in a David Bakhtiari or a Donovan Smith back to the Chiefs? Are they going to be confident in what they have going forward? Because Wanye did have the four starts last year. He did have some experience. Does Wanye start the first couple games, then it's Kingsley? Or is it like you and I said in training camp a couple years ago, Dusty, when Mitch Holtis joined us, and he looked at both of us and said, I expect Trey Smith. You remember that day?
Mm-hmm.
Says, I expect Trey. And what happened? Trey Smith was in there. So I'm curious what Mitch thinks, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Mitch Holtis, who has a birthday later this month, by the way. I saw that you have
happy birthday, Mitch.
And you have an anniversary with Odyssey. I went to the John before this interview, so you know how you know the things on the door. It says happy birthdays in June and happy anniversaries in June. I saw Jay Binkley on there. I was like, that's fun. I'm getting ready to
talk
to you.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, going to the bathroom always reminds me of anniversaries and birthdays.
You know what I mean?
I'm right there with you.
And then you forget completely about it right when you walk out the door. I do want to bring up the quarterback situation. Obviously, you lose a juggernaut in L'Jarius Sneed, but insert Trent McDuffie as the new undeniable leader on that quarterback staff. And I think that when you look at that and you look around him, do you have enough trust in this secondary moving forward on a year where you lose your number one corner? It's not always easy, right? Like we are going to see this year. I know we will. I know it's coming, Binkley, where it's going to be like, this is one of those plays where the Chiefs miss a L'Jarius Sneed and Trent McDuffie combination, but maybe that's early on. And when the season progresses, it's now Trent McDuffie and fill in the blank.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's going to be. Josh Williams is a guy I'm really looking at. They're looking for him to step up. You've seen several reports, whether it's Pro Football Focus, whatever, looking at the Chiefs and talking about, could this be Josh Williams' time? I think he's going to get that opportunity. Jalen Watson's going to be a guy battling him for that. Jalen Watson's a guy with two interceptions in the postseason 2 years ago. But now both these guys have a postseason experience for a couple of years, and that's always a good thing to see. And not only that, but look at these safeties behind these corners. You know, Shamari Connor will be playing that nickel role for this team. Shamari Connor did such a good job last year. Brian Cooks coming back from injury. Justin Reed's back for this team. Then you have the rookie Jaden Hicks that you'll see a lot this year on the Chiefs defense. I think the safety core is strong, and I think guys like Shamari Connor and guys like that can step up in that nickel role and guard that tight end out of the backfield. And can Josh Williams step up and be that L'Jarius Sneed guy? I mean, here's L'Jarius Sneed, the guy that, you know, the Chiefs, he did a great job. Listen, for fourth-round pick, he was great. He's a guy that didn't practice in training camp last year. You remember, L'Jarius Sneed was out almost every day of training camp, and, you know, they were careful with him. But you know what? I love this secondary. But, yes, that's one of the camp battles, too, behind left tackle, who's going to step up into that corner role and be that L'Jarius Sneed. I tell you this much, I think Shamari Connor kind of fits that role as far as a guy that can get to the quarterback, can guard the nickel, can be that tough physical presence they're looking for. I think Jaden Hicks provides that as well. He definitely provides it in the run support for this team. So maybe a combination of both. But I always looked when they drafted Shamari Connor, I always looked at it saying, okay, this might be your L'Jarius Sneed replacement down the line. And sure enough, you're what the Chiefs do. They only draft your replacement the year before.
Is it really important to dive into, like, who's going to be the third and second string running back in this year's team? I know it's always interesting to, like, think about that because, obviously, Isaiah Pacheco won't be out there every offensive play, and you got to have somebody in there that you trust and that you feel is you know, can get the job done. And, you know, we look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire coming back. Is there enough trust in him to where it's like, hey, man, you're just the number two guy. It is what it is. You just got to be there when we need you and stay healthy.
Yeah, I trust their judgment. I mean, they watched him every day in practice. They know what he can do. Obviously, the Chiefs brought him back for a reason. They know this team extremely well. But I think the running back game is going to be different this year, Dusty. I just don't see eight-man creeping on the box. Chiefs threw a lot of short passes last year, you know, behind the line of scrimmage or, you know, barely 5 yards to 10 yards. They were one of the leaders last year in throwing the ball short. Well, this year, you know, with Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy and company, they're going to go down the field more. And I think when the Chiefs go down the field more, those safeties are going to back up, and you're going to see a more dominant running game. I always thought being a running back for the Chiefs is a great position to be when they get back to playing the Chiefs football, which I think they will be, which is pushing the ball downfield to roll that element of surprise where you can't always creep those safeties up like we've seen in the past. So I expect the running back still to do their job, if not a better job, just because of the down-the-field threat.
When you look at this team going forward towards a three-peat, it seems all focus is on that. It was, you know, we talked to you, I think it was this time last week, actually, when we were doing the red carpet stuff, and it kind of seemed like, yeah, it's nice. It's a Game of Thrones theme. It's kind of, you know, fun to see all these guys living their best life and going to get another piece of jewelry. But it seems like when you do a three-peat, Binkley, you have to be damn near perfect. And I mean damn near perfect. Everybody now, if they didn't already, wants to beat you. But now it's going to, you know, amp up a little bit more as the season goes on. When you look at this team and you look at maybe where their faults are going into training camp, which will be in another month and a week, Where do you see, like, the biggest, weakest point for the Chiefs, maybe outside of what you were talking about earlier with left tackle, because it's just it's a question of unknown. Where do you see maybe, like, a soft spot in this Chiefs offense or in this Chiefs roster?
You know what? I don't. I look at this roster, and I actually like this roster a little bit better than even last year. And you got to think about an offense. And, you know, I looked back at the last 10 or 15 Super Bowl champions, which team only had one guy that was a first-round pick on offense? And the Rams, they had two. The Chiefs had one. It was Patrick Mahomes. That was the only first-round pick on offense as a starter because Clyde wasn't a starter. Obviously, he was a first-round pick. And the offensive line, I mean, yeah, there were some guys close to being first-round picks, but they weren't. They were second-round picks. But I like that, and I like the fact they brought this defense back. I like the fact that, you know, Turk Wharton came back and Derek Nnadi and Mike Danna, and you're bringing this core back, and you brought Drew Tranquil back, and you're bringing a lot of the core back for this defense to finish number two in the NFL in scoring defense. I guess at corner with L'Jarius Sneed, there's the big question mark. You know, how much are they going to miss L'Jarius Sneed? Because he shut down the number one receiver. I mean, he was the shutdown guy. He and Trent McDuffie, and I expect Trent McDuffie to continue that trend for the Chiefs, but he was that shutdown guy for this team. That and left tackle, I think left tackle is still a big question mark. We'll see when we get to training camp if Kingsley can do the job. Maybe he can. You know, he's been on the right side, been on the left side. Wanya Morris has played on the right side. He's been on the left side. I like what they did with they brought in a lot of extra offensive line depth to replace Al Legretti. I just really like what they've done. We'll see how much Kingsley and see if they have to break off that phone call to Donovan Smith. But top to bottom, this roster is stacked. I love the tight end room with Jared Wiley in here now to be that third tight end. I mean, the tight ends just set with this team with guys that can catch the football in Travis Kelce and Noah Gray and Jared Wiley, who does not drop the ball. Had an 80-yard touchdown last year, led the NCAA in touchdowns last year, was a red zone threat for TCU. I just like, and that's your third tight end. I just like the way that all these guys catch the football. I don't see a real weakness with this team like I've seen in years past.
Love to hear it. Beakley, get some rest. Get your batteries charged up. You got to be my plus one Saturday at Rob Brenton's wedding when we get our dancing shoes on and maybe turn some heads to the single ladies, if you know what I mean.
I'm sure we'll drink some beer, Duff, man.
No doubt about it. I'll be a wine guy, I promise. But Beakley, have a great night. Enjoy the patio and enjoy the longest day of the year. And happy summer. And cheers to you, my friend.
See you guys. See you and G-Dog.
Jay Beakley doing the Lord's work, talking Chiefs football in the middle of June, sitting on a patio having a cold one. I mean, tell me more. I mean, actually, say less. Say less. Saturday. Pretty big day in Royals history, one that I thought had already existed. I'll explain what I mean by that next about what this person was to baseball and sports in general and why this person or this sort of athlete does not exist anymore. This is After Hours. You're listening to 610 Sports Radio. Back here on After Hours, inching closer and closer to 8 o'clock, which means we'll get into the out of left field question, which I think could be a little fun tonight, because I think we all have the same in common of at least what it should be kind of about. 913-586-7610. For those of you that have missed Vern's pregame show or haven't heard the announcement, he's got a slew of tickets to Saturday and Sunday's game against the Cleveland Guardians when they come in town next weekend, or the end of next week, for a set of four games that starts a week from tonight. And Sunday is the iced out or the frozen or the what is it, the White Walker version of Cole Reagan's bobblehead. And then Saturday is the Bo Jackson Hall of Fame ceremony, the Hawaiian shirts, which I haven't really figured this out, but the next two Saturdays, this Saturday and the following, the Royals are playing at like 3:10. Now, they're playing in Texas this Saturday, 3:10 start, I believe. And then when they play the Cleveland Guardians next Saturday, it's a 3:10 start. Not mad about it.
I am very well aware of that because yours truly will be working those days. So
yeah.
I've been they've played a lot of them. They've played through June and July. There's going to be like four of them now.
Right.
I mean, they've played like a lot of 3 o'clock Saturday games, which is just weird to me. Like, why? Why are you playing 3 o'clock Saturday games?
Especially in like the middle of summer.
Exactly, right? Yeah, it'd be one thing if it was like, you know, you're trying to play during the warmest time in May, right? Because it could be -0 degrees outside. Or it could be, you know, 87 degrees outside. I live in Kansas City. So, you know, trying to hit that warm spot early in the season, I get. But, yeah, it's weird. I don't remember this ever being a thing.
It's interesting. Not mad about it, though.
No, it is not. You know, you get to sit down, you watch the game, and then you get your Saturday night open, you know?
Exactly. But Bo Jackson, right? A lot of talk about him when they do the promo on TV or when Vern talks about it. Because if you get the pitch clock right, then you get a chance to go to either one of those two games with free tickets, right? Colin DeVern, always in the second segment of his, you know, on deck show. And you can, get a chance to go to one of those games. But I thought this was interesting because I had a conversation with a buddy last night. And we were talking about how Bo Jackson, how they were talking about is, you know, one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah, you haven't seen a guy like Bo Jackson since Bo Jackson. And part of the reason of that is that those type of athletes are anomalies, right? They just don't exist that much or ever again. And I was trying to think of, you know, the best sort of multi-sport athlete after Bo Jackson. And the only answer I could come up with was Deion Sanders. Now, both of these guys were really, like, in their primes before, well, Bo really, like, before I was born, and then he was gone before I even knew what was going on in the world itself. Deion Sanders, I was still a little young following sports. Like, I knew who Primetime was. I remember the high step and stuff like that, but I couldn't tell you much more other than those when it came to following Deion Sanders. But I think that there's also a reason as to why we don't see athletes like this anymore, because I think that there are cross-sport athletes that you could easily see, right? Like, there's no doubt in my mind that if Russell Wilson wanted to, he could have played baseball and football. We all know that he could. He went and did, like, spring training and stuff with the Texas Rangers. You look at Kyler Murray, right? He was going to be a pitcher, but that was more so of, like, well, I want to make some money because NIL deals didn't exist, and I also want to, like, you know, put kind of like a threshold on my next contract if I go to play football, which it worked out for Kyler Murray, right? But I think the reason why we don't see this anymore is not because these athletes don't exist. I think it's because contracts in sports just became more evidently clear that they were just going to pay guys more money as the sports evolved, right? You look at what baseball players make. You look at what quarterbacks make. You look at what wide receivers make. And you think of, like, the athlete that could do two different sports. It would probably be in those sort of skill set positions, right? Like, you'd never see, like, Creed Humphrey play center, then he's also a DH. Right? That's just not how that works. But I think that the reason that we saw these sort of athletes kind of fizzle out is maybe the same way that if you grew up in a high school where there was a really good athlete. Like, the other day, a buddy of mine and I were trying to dive down and look and see if Bobby Witt Jr. ever played football. Because, I mean, like, Bobby Witt Jr., in my opinion, in high school, would be like a Christian McCaffrey on steroids. As fast as he is, as quick as he is, and as smart as he is in an athlete, you just throw Bobby Witt Jr. a little out pass and be like, okay, let your speed and your vision take over. And he'd probably be unstoppable. Right? But as you've probably witnessed before in, like, high school, once a kid gets really good at a sport, it looks like it's going to be his sport moving forward. One coach is like, hey, I think you're done wrestling. We need to, like, put your focus in somewhere else. And I think the reason why we don't see these athletes do the, you know, the cross sports thing is because of the contracts that these guys make. Like, imagine if Deion existed in today's world. Deion Sanders would be getting paid like Jalen Ramsey. He'd be getting paid, and maybe he was already getting paid like that in those times, but he was still playing baseball and also still playing football. And in fact, we've seen the 30 for 30 where Deion Sanders was flown to a baseball game and then benched because he missed the start of the game, but he had just wrapped up a football game in Dallas, and it was a huge deal. And it's interesting that you would see this sort of thing happen today, because I don't know what athletes today would technically be able to play both sports. Like, you put some pads on LeBron James, he's probably a solid tight end, but also a very good basketball player.
Wasn't this a conversation about football players playing basketball like a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
That was making the rounds. It's like, if you were to pick your, you know, would it be easier for football players to play basketball or basketball players to play football?
Sure.
I do think there are some, I agree with you, right? Like, there are just athletes. Once you get to a certain point, right, everybody plays multiple. If you're an athlete, you play multiple sports, because if you're a football player, what are you doing during the spring? Well, there's a lot of guys that are probably track athletes, right? There are a lot of guys that probably do play baseball. We see the clips all the time of Patrick Mahomes dominating in high school basketball, football, and baseball. Then we see his stuff that he played in college during baseball, right? Like, there are a ton of guys. So I have two answers to your question about dual sport players. One's a joke.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. right, who, for, you know, multiple reasons, let's just say,
mm-hmm.
Definitely not gambling related.
Mm-mm.
Michael Jordan played for the White Sox, mm-hmm. right? And if you look at what he was able to do for someone who had played basketball and then just picked up baseball, it's pretty good,
yeah.
right? So you've got guys like that where, at a certain point, you're an athlete. You're just an athlete, and you can have the ability to go play other sports. And then there's Tim Tebow.
Mm. Yeah, he tried.
He tried.
Yeah. Somebody says Kyler Murray was a first-round pick in baseball.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
And he took that contract and went to the Oakland Athletics because he was like, I can use this as personal clout, and it's an extra little bit of cash. But again, like, he didn't end up really playing baseball. He was in their farm system, but he never pitched in the pros. And I don't think he ever really thought or planned on wanting to pitch in Major League Baseball. But he signed a contract and he got paid.
And he was a first round pick. Like, that's the thing. Like, if you're the 50th pick of whatever team, mm-hmm. you know, like, that's one thing, right? Then you're just kind of taking a flyer on a guy. But if you're a first round pick in baseball, especially a top end pick, you know that the talent level is there. You may not make it because, you know, making professional sports at any level is hard, but if you're a first-round pick, the talent level is obviously there.
Do you think if you were to go back in time and ask Bo Jackson, would you rather put more focus on baseball or football, which one do you think he'd actually say? Because football would be the one that actually ended Bo Jackson.
Yeah, well, I think that just the fact that he never had any rest,
yeah,
I think that's a thing that keeps guys from playing multiple sports at that professional level, is that if you're a football player, especially how aggressive he was, mm-hmm. right, you are constantly, you're getting battered and you're seeking out contact. That was a scary man on the field.
No doubt.
And then during your off season, when your body is trying to recover, especially in a time where medical science isn't to the point where it is now,
mm-hmm.
then you go out and you play baseball. And yeah, that's not a non-contact sport, but there's a lot of stress you put on your lower legs and your hips, right? I mean, we see the plays that he would make. That video of him making that catch, jumping up against the wall, and then throwing the guy out at home. I mean, I've seen that video so many times, and it still impresses me. Yeah. So, like, while it's not a contact sport, you're still putting a lot of stress on your lower body and your lower back, and I think that's what inevitably destroyed his body. I don't think it was playing football or just playing baseball. I think the fact that he never got any rest during the calendar year, that's what destroyed his body.
Two quick trivia questions about Bo Jackson that I'm going to put the under a 0.5 that you'll get either one of them right. Bo Jackson is from Bessemer, Alabama, I believe is how you say it. Bessemer, Alabama. What other famous athlete is from that same town? Jameis Winston. The other one is Bo Jackson played college at Auburn, was a running back. Who was his tight end? Famous baseball player, Hall of Fame baseball player.
Would I actually know?
You should. He played in the American League, and he played in the American League Central against the Royals.
I have no idea.
Frank Thomas.
Oh, really?
Imagine running behind Frank Thomas, who could have been a dual
athlete.
Holy
crap. I did not know that.
That's Quentin. I'm Dusty. Coming up on the other side, we get to the out of left field question. It's a doozy. Plus, we're going to talk a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about the J.J. Redick signing and what I think it means for the future of coaching in, well, any sort of field of sports. I'm Dusty Likens. That's Quentin. This After Hours, you're listening to 610 Sports Radio. Back here in After Hours, wrapping up the 7 o'clock hour. We'll be back for another hour, and then the show will wrap up at 9 o'clock as it is still beautifully lit outside. Longest day of the year. Happy first day of summer. 913-586-7610. Somebody asked the question, was curious why the Royals were not picked to play at the Rickwood game with the Negro Leagues baseball Museum, and why the Monarchs, and the way the Monarchs were back in the day. I don't know. I do love that MLB is doing this game on Fox right now, as it is San Francisco versus St. Louis. St. Louis carries a 5-3 lead over the Giants. But I don't think it's sick. I mean, they plan these things out, you know, a year in advance. And I doubt at the time MLB was looking at it like, eh, let's put the Royals on. Even though, obviously, it would pay homage to the Negro Leagues Museum and also the Kansas City Monarchs. But I don't know the honest answer to that question. But as a man of the text line and the people of the text line, I like try to, you know, try to get to the questions. In a little bit, we'll get to the out of left field question. But I do want to address the J.J. Redick thing. Clearly, he wasn't upset that he was the second choice, right? You know, if you and another guy are going for the hand of a young lady, or a young lady going for the hand of a young man, and you knew that you were the second option, how do you feel about that? Obviously, a dramatic and drastic opposite opinion. But J.J. Redick and LeBron, obviously, it's no secret that they have a good relationship, but Dan Hurley turns down the gig to stay with the UConn men's college basketball team, lets you kind of know that college basketball is doing just fine, at least in some regards when it comes to head coaching. The coaches aren't leaving necessarily to go head off to the pros. But it kind of opened my eyes, because I know that J.J. Redick has a NBA background. I know that J.J. Redick was one of the greatest college basketball players of all time. But really, J.J. Redick, at least in my opinion, kind of got his notoriety and his following when he would do stuff with Stephen A. on ESPN, or he would do his podcast, or he would be an in-game sideline, not a sideline reporter, but an announcer, a color commentator. And it kind of made me think, has there been a lot of guys that have gone from, you know, because Redick, a lot of times we'll see guys, Doc Rivers, an example in the NBA, will go from head coaching to going to, you know, a TV crew or an announcing crew, and then back into head coaching, right? And it made me think, like, will we see this, and have we ever really seen this before? Like, I know a lot of people have said that Lewis Riddick's name has been popular amongst maybe people to be a GM for franchises, because Lewis Riddick is a smart individual about football, kind of knows the ins and outs, has a good following with the players in the league and coaches and other GMs. Lewis Riddick could be a GM, but we've yet to see it, right? And a lot of times we do see a coach go to TV and then come right back. Gruden is a perfect example, right? Gruden did the coaching thing, had his run, stopped coaching, went to the booth, went right back to coaching, and now he's MIA. And this makes me think, does this open the door for guys like a Dan Orlovsky? Because Dan Orlovsky kind of gives me the J.J. Redick vibe of the NFL. A guy who is familiar with the league, played in the league, played college ball, has this, you know, football mindset. And it makes me wonder, is there a chance that we see somebody like a Dan Orlovsky be a head football coach? Because that's essentially what J.J. Redick is doing, right? J.J. Redick was an announcer, former player, but in the pros and in the, you know, college ranks, but had never really coached before. And now he was the second option behind Dan Hurley, who originally J.J. Redick was getting a lot of looks, and then the Lakers pushed in all their chips for Dan Hurley, didn't get him. And then they came back and knocked on J.J. Redick's door. And within a couple of weeks, J.J. Redick, or a couple of weeks, yeah, it was about a week, J.J. Redick answered the call and said, I'll take the 4-year deal. And the 816 brings up a point that Jeff Saturday was that guy. Now, Jeff Saturday was an interim head coach, and it didn't last. And he was somebody that is a perfect example. It didn't work out. Now the MLB at Rickwood is broadcasting the game as if it is back in the 1950s. They went to a black and white production, and they're putting the graphics up as if you're watching a game that existed almost 70 years ago. Pretty cool for Fox and MLB tonight. But yeah, Jeff Saturday might have ruined it for everybody. I don't know if he actually did, But it's interesting because J.J. Redick obviously has a basketball mindset, but he has an announcing first. Now he's going to coach. He's boys with LeBron. The Lakers are a big program. We'll see if it pans out. But I wonder if Dan Orlovsky is looking at this situation going, I have a chance to be an NFL head coach because I'm a very similar storyline to somebody of J.J. Redick. Now, Dan Orlovsky doesn't have the pass that J.J. Redick had, but again, they kind of do similar things and they're kind of similar age. And it's kind of like the similar sort of thing where it'd be like, hey, you know what? We'll do this.
Dick Vermeil did the same thing where he was a head coach and then he left for like 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to like CBS and then came back in 97
with the Rams.
With the Rams and then eventually coming to Kansas City. So
they coached first.
Right, he did. And he was a college coach mm-hmm. and then went to Philadelphia, then took a 15-year. But a 15-year mm-hmm. break is a long time.
Right.
And then able to come back and be successful with two franchises.
Because Gruden had a long break, too. Like, Gruden was doing Monday Night Football for, what, like 6-7 years?
Yeah. So there is, it's rare, but it's not uncommon, I guess you could say. It's not unprecedented, I should say. It's rare, but it's definitely not unprecedented.
Dan Orlovsky is going to be the next head coach of the Jaguars. You watch. It is close to 8 o'clock. We do the out of left field question. We'll get into it after the break. But before we get into the out of left field question, always 8 o'clock, Quentin. What type of wedding person are you? For those of you that didn't know Rob Brenton, congratulations to him and his fiance. They will be getting married Saturday. I will be there. I will tell you what kind of wedding persona I am, Quentin as well, but 913-586-7610. What kind of wedding person are you? For example, are you the guy that shows up and then as soon as the wedding is out, you just go straight to your car and leave? Or are you the guy that sticks around, hangs out, has the meal, has a drink, says hi, makes sure you were noticed, and then you leave? Or do you cut it up on the dance floor? 913-586-7610. The out of left field question, what kind of wedding person are you? 913-586-7610. We'll come back. This is After Hours and do the out of left field question.